It is always good to see everybody that's here, but it's great to see the young people sitting up here close where they can pay attention. Appreciate you all. We got more on the other side. It's just it's encouraging to see what the future of not just the church here at Oak Grove, but the Lord's church, wherever it's found, has in store for it. There are a lot of things to be worried about, a lot of things that we can look out and observe and see not going quite the way we would hope, not going the way that the Lord would have it to, but there are still some good things taking place, and let's be thankful for that. I appreciate Jonathan's prayer this morning. As God blessed His people going into the land of promise, He warned them not to let those blessings become a curse. And I am thankful, as Jonathan said this morning, for the air conditioning that we have. But I'm afraid that there are a lot of Christians who, if we didn't have the air, wouldn't come, wouldn't stay. And we need to, yes, receive the blessing, be thankful for the blessing. But if we didn't have it, if something happened and it broke, let's still come. Let's still spend the time and worship to God together. I want you to think for just a moment about life. And I know we've all at times thought about what the perfect life might be like. It'd be different for different folks, but I imagine there'd be a lot of similarities too in thinking about what the perfect life would be like. But in that perfect life, there would be the perfect person. And what would we imagine that perfect person to be like? There are people in this world that others look up to, that people idolize. And I don't necessarily mean that in a bad sense, though it very quickly can turn into something that's sinful. But I just mean it in the sense of someone that people look up to. Someone that people look and they see certain qualities about them, things that they possess, characteristics that they have, and they want to imitate that. They want to be like them. What would the perfect person be like? Who would we want to imitate? I hope that we all understand that Jesus is that perfect example that we could follow. If we were striving for perfection, then Jesus is that picture. But He's not the only one in Scripture that we find as being complete, as being whole, being the man that God would have him to be. And whether we're talking about Jesus or we're going to look at this morning Job, I hope we understand that what makes them the person that they are, it didn't have anything to do with the clothes that they wore. It didn't have anything to do with the house that they lived in or the car that they might have driven. Of course, we know they didn't have cars back then, but making a modern-day application, those are the types of things that people often look at in thinking about the perfect life. Where will I live? What would the house look like? What would the car be? Or how many will I have? What other accessories will I have to go along with that? And so we think about our life and what we desire. But this morning, I'd like for us to think about in terms of the person that we would like to be. That while the world might have its standard, and the world, you know, we like to count things, and we've got top tens for everything under the sun. If we were going to have a top ten list of people, just based on who they are, who would make up that list? What qualities, what characteristics would be looked at to define who could make that list? Well, God tells us who makes His list. It doesn't matter what we think. Ultimately, it doesn't matter at all what we think about one another or what we think about others. What matters is what the Lord believes, what the Lord knows to be true. And here we have Job chapter 1 and verse 1 listed out, where Job is said to be blameless and upright. I said verse 1. Verse 1 says Job was blameless and upright, but that in verse 8 is shown not to be some man's opinion. whoever wrote the book of Job, whether it was Job or Elihu or one of the others, you know, that might have been his estimation. But we see in verse 8 of chapter 1, it was also God's estimation. And what I'd like for us to do this morning is look and see what was it about Job that God said he is blameless and upright? Because I think that is the perfect man that we should then strive to be. That complete man, the ideal man, the man of God. And ladies, don't think that this doesn't have anything to do with you, because we'll find that all the things we're going to look at concerning Job is something that you as a daughter, as a sister, as a mother, qualities that you should also strive to possess, things that would be pleasing to God. So if we were going to define blameless and upright, just looking at our passage here in the book of Job, we could define it in a couple of ways. Verse 1 says, there was a man in the land of Uz whose name was Job. So what does blameless and upright look like? It looks like Job. Well, that doesn't tell us a whole lot. Job lived probably during the time of the patriarchs early on. Some believe Job to be the oldest of the books of the Bible. We won't go into great detail on how that information is ascertained. We'll just quickly say, when you look at the age of Job, when you look at the way he interacted with his family, being sort of a priest for his family and offering sacrifices for them, that fits that patriarchal period. But the age that he lived to narrows it down pretty well for us, that he would have been there about the time of Abraham, possibly a little earlier, possibly even a little later. But most don't believe Job to have been a descendant of Abraham. That is, he is not an Israelite, not one that received the law there at Mount Sinai, which I think says a lot about, you know, being blameless and upright. It doesn't have to be someone of a particular race, a particular lineage. It's simply one who understands what the will of the Lord is and strives to do that will. And that's what we will find in Job. The other thing that's said there in verse 1 and in verse 8 is that he was one who feared God and shunned evil. So when it says he was blameless and upright, there's no one like him. He's blameless and upright. One who fears God and shuns evil, that is a good summary statement of what it means to be blameless and upright. If you fear God, if you shun evil, then you will be blameless and upright. But again, that doesn't give us a lot of information about the particulars, the details in everyday life. How is it that we are supposed to live? Well, in looking at the life of Job, we often look at chapter 1 and his dealings with his children, his concern for their spiritual well-being, and that is very good. That is admirable, and those are qualities that we ought to imitate. But there's another section of Job that I think sometimes we overlook, and I say that because I have overlooked this before. Now, there's a section where Job tells us more about his life that also then gives us more insight about what it means to be blameless and upright. So rather than trying to get a rigid definition, let's look to the book, and we're particularly going to be in chapters 29, 30, and 31 of the book of Job, and let's see what a blameless and upright man looks like. How does he act? How does he interact with others? How does he interact with God? What is it that he does in life? What does he abstain from in life that would have the Lord to say that there's none like him? He's blameless and upright, one who fears God and shuns evil. Well, starting in chapter 29, let's read verses 1 through 3. Now, to set the stage just a little bit, I think most would understand, but just in case we've forgotten, Job, after he is afflicted by Satan because of his righteousness, he begins to question some things. One of the things is, why is God allowing him to suffer? Well, he's got three friends that came to visit, and they're going to offer some suggestions. And their suggestion is, Job, you're suffering because you've sinned. And that's always what they come back to. They began with just vague accusation of sin, and they'll eventually come to the point where they're accusing him of specific sins. And they say, this is why you're suffering. And Job responds to them a lot of times just in, again, vague terms of, no, I haven't sinned. I've been upright. I've been righteous in my dealings with people. But when you get to this section, starting in chapter 29, he begins to detail some things about his life. And I don't believe that this is a man who's being boastful, that this is a man who's saying, look at all that I've done. How dare God treat me this way? It's just when his friends have again and again and again talked about how terrible of a person Job has been, you know, he's got to defend himself, and that's what he's doing. So as we read, this is the type of person that we see Job is. So beginning in verse 1 of Job 29, it says, Job further continued his discourse and said, oh, that I were as in months past, as in the days when God watched over me, when his lamp shone upon my head, and when by his light I walked through darkness. And in that you see Job, he's looking back to the past. He's looking to a time of blessings and honor. But one of the things that we see in those verses is that Job looked to God for direction. He looked to God for guidance. In verse 3, when his lamp shone upon my head, I don't think he's just talking about there his lamp shining in a sense of all these blessings being bestowed upon him, because he goes on to say, when by his light I walked through darkness. Job lived in a wicked world. Job wasn't blameless and upright because the land of Uz was such a righteous place with righteous people. And since he was surrounded by such great people, then he could be great. And he lived in a dark world, just as we do. But through the light of God, through his counsel, Job could walk right. He could do what was right. In the world that we live in, I mentioned the young people, and we look at the surroundings that they are faced with when they're out in the world, when they're at school, when they're at play, whatever they're doing, and we think, well, I just don't know how they could make it. Well, they can. You can. If you look to God for guidance, if you will let God, by his light, shine the way through the darkness. So a blameless and upright man is one who, he's not seeking to direct his own steps. He's not listening to his own heart and what he thinks he should do. He's looking to God for counsel. And so what we're going to find in the rest of what we're going to read, these aren't things that Job decided for himself. I think this would be good to do. I think this is the way that a man who is striving to be right in the sight of God ought to live. These are things that we understand are given by God, directions that he found from the Lord. When he begins there in verse 4, it says, just as I was in the days of my prime, when the friendly counsel of God was over my tent, when the Almighty was with me, when my children were around me, when my steps were bathed with cream and the rock poured out rivers of oil for me, when I went out to the gate by the city, when I took my seat in the open square, the young men saw me and hid. The aged rose and stood. The princes refrained from talking and put their hand on their mouth. The voice of nobles was hushed, and their tongue stuck to the roof of their mouth. When the ear heard, then it blessed me. And when the eye saw, then it approved me. Job had pretty good standing among the people. He was respected by the people of his time. When he spoke, they listened. When he walked, they watched. They were respectful of Job. Why? Because he had a lot of money? Because he could do something for them if they made friends with Job? Well, you might suspect that that'd be the case. And we know that sometimes there are people who pretend to have an affinity for someone because of what they can get out of the relationship. But notice what Job says in verse 12. All of these things that he enjoyed, the respect that was shown to him. In verse 12, because I delivered the poor who cried out, the fatherless, and the one who had no helper. And he's going to continue on with that list. But the indication is people respected Job. They listened to Job. They watched Job. Not just because he was a rich man that could help them, but because he was a good man. Because he was a righteous man. Because he was a man that stood out among the people of the land. And so, a man who is blameless and upright will be generally respected for his goodness. Even people of the world, when you have a good man, one who does what is right and good in the sight of God, they might not agree with his doctrine. They might not agree with everything he has to say concerning God, Christ, the church, the way that we ought to live, but they respect that man. They listen to what he has to say. They might not follow exactly in his footsteps, but there is a regard given to that type of man. Because, again, he is a good man. When you continue on there in verse 12, because I delivered the poor who cried out, the fatherless, and the one who had no helper, the blessing of a perishing man came upon me, and I caused the widow's heart to sing for joy. You're reading here about a man who saw people who suffered, who saw people who were oppressed, and he didn't just pity them. He actually took the time to help them. In verse 14, I put on righteousness and it clothed me, and my justice was like a robe and a turban. I was eyes to the blind, I was feet to the lame, I was a father to the poor, and I searched out the case that I did not know. I broke the fangs of the wicked and plucked the victim from his teeth. And so you had a man who not only was willing to take care of the needs of the poor, the fatherless, the widow, all who he found, but if they were being oppressed, he dealt with the oppressors. He dealt with the wicked. He found justice for those who otherwise could not find it. Look in chapter 30 and verse 25. You see, this is just a feigned, pretend type of righteousness for Job. There are people who will do some good things for people in this world, but their motivation is maybe not what it ought to be. But look at what Job says in verse 25 of chapter 30. Have I not wept for him who was in trouble? Has not my soul grieved for the poor? Job was moved by compassion. He had a genuine care and a love for those who were in need. He didn't try to see how he could get out of situations where somebody might ask, make a request of him for something. He was moved by that so that he wanted to do all that he could to help them. You look in chapter 31, beginning in verse 16. He says, if I have kept the poor from their desire or caused the eyes of the widow to fail or eaten my morsel by myself so that the fatherless could not eat of it, but from my mouth I reared him as a father and from my mother's womb I guided the widow. If I have seen anyone perish for lack of clothing or any poor man without covering, if his heart has not blessed me, and if he was not warmed with the fleece of my sheep, if I have raised my hand against the fatherless when I saw I had help in the gate, then let my arm fall from my shoulder. Let my arm be torn from the socket. That's a pretty bold statement. He's not saying that I did some good things to some people. He's saying if I ever saw someone who was in need, and I didn't help them, if I didn't take the opportunities given to me and see that I had then a responsibility to do what I could, if I didn't do that, then let my arm fall off. God blessed us with arms. He blessed us with hands. And Paul says in Ephesians chapter 4 and verse 28 that a man ought to work with his hands, doing what's good, laboring. Why? So that we might have something to give to him who has a need. And I think Job's the idea here, the Lord blessed us with the ability. He's given us the arms. He's given us the hands. If we're not using it for the Lord's purposes, for helping those who are in need, then let them fall off. They're useless to us if we're not doing what the Lord would have us to do with those things. So if we want to be blameless and upright, then we need to have that same care and compassion that Job shows for those who were in need. The list is long. That list hasn't gone away. There are still poor and needy and those who cannot care for themselves among us today. And as we have the opportunity and as we have the ability, then we have the responsibility to help those in any way that we can to relieve their suffering and their need. Now, as we continue on, we find that Job in chapter 31, beginning in verse 5, "If I have walked with falsehood, or if my foot has hastened to deceit, let me be weighed on honest scales that God may know my integrity. If my step has turned from the way, or my heart walked after my eyes, or if any spot adheres to my hands, then let me sow and another eat. Yes, let my harvest be rooted out." And then drop down to verse 13. "If I have despised the cause of my male or female servant when they complained against me, what then shall I do when God rises up, when He punishes? How shall I answer Him? Did not He who made me in the womb make them? Did not the same one fashion us in the womb?" And what you see in those verses, and others as well, is that Job was a fair and a just man. He was a very wealthy man. And sometimes we look at people with wealth and we just assume that they got that wealth in some way that wasn't altogether honest. That in order to have the things of this life, you've got to be shrewd. You've got to deal shrewdly with people. And at times, if necessary, we might have to fudge a little. We might have to bend a little. But Job declares that he never did that. He never walked with falsehood. He never used deceit as a way to gain something. In verse 6, "Let me be weighed on honest scales that God may know my integrity." Are we willing to make that declaration? Are we willing to let God weigh us and determine whether or not we are honest and people of integrity? Well, I don't steal. I don't cheat people much. Individuals, we wouldn't take anything from them, but then what about from a company? A company that hasn't given you what you deserve. Is it okay then to take what doesn't belong to you, take what's theirs for yourself? When Job talks about deceit and falsehood, we make a contract with our employer. We're going to give you this much time for this much money. Are we giving the time? We take the money. Are we giving all of our time and effort? If we go to the store and there's a mistake made to our benefit, do we point that out to the cashier? Not because we want to be seen as some goody-two-shoes, but because it's the right thing to do. Yeah, Walmart's a big company. They're never going to miss that money. It doesn't matter how much the mistake is. They're not going to miss it, but are we going to take it if it doesn't belong to us? If we find some, remember when I was a kid, finders keepers, losers weepers. That's not in the Bible. What we find in scriptures is that people of integrity, people who are honorable, they search out. They try to find who it belongs to. And if they couldn't find who it belonged to, a man like Job, I tell you what he'd do with it. He'd find somebody to help with it. Even if maybe he couldn't return it to its proper owner, from what we read about him, he's going to use that to be a blessing to others. So he was a fair and just man. At the beginning of chapter 31, he says, "I've made a covenant with my eyes. Why then should I look upon a young woman? For what is the allotment of God from above and the inheritance of the Almighty from on high? Is it not destruction for the wicked and disaster for workers of iniquity? Does He not see my ways and count all my steps?" If you drop down to verse 9, he says, "If my heart has been enticed by a woman, or if I have lurked at my neighbor's door, then let my wife grind for another. Let others bow down over her, for that would be wickedness. Yes, it would be iniquity deserving of judgment, for that would be a fire that consumes to destruction and would root out all my increase. Job was a man who didn't follow the common practice. And I'm sure it was the common practice of his day just as it is in our day. That, you know, window shopping is okay. That, you know, you can pass by and you can look to your heart's content and see all of these wonderful things. But then, you know, as long as we don't try to take it, as long as we understand it's not ours, he says, I made a covenant with my eye. It began with his eyes. He doesn't even get to the part about it, you know, his thoughts. He does get to thoughts and action, but he understands it begins with his eyes. This was before Jesus in the Sermon on the Mount said, if a man looks after a woman to lust on her, he's committed adultery with her already in his heart. This Job understood before Mount Sinai, when we're not to covet our neighbor's wife, when we're not to commit adultery. But Job understood this was the will of God. We read in Job chapter 1 of the sons and daughters of the possessions that Job had. And he had a wife. And his wife, she made a blunder. She told Job, why do you hold fast to your integrity? Curse God and die. I don't want to be unfair to Job's wife. She was guilty. She sinned. I don't want to sugarcoat it either. But you know she lost everything along with Job. Those were her kids that died. Those were her possessions that were taken. That was her husband that was suffering miserably. And sometimes if you have a spouse and you've seen them suffer, you understand it's harder at times to watch them suffer than it is to suffer yourself. So understand where she's coming from. And it's interesting what Job says. Job doesn't say, you foolish woman, how dare you say such a thing. He says, you speak like one of the foolish women. You're acting like a foolish woman. He doesn't accuse her of being foolish. At the end, when Job is restored by God, he's given more children than he had to begin with. He's given more possessions than he had to begin with. There's no indication that he's ever given another wife. There's no indication that he ever wanted another. And what he says here in chapter 31 indicates that he understood the blessing that God had given him. And so he restrained his eyes. And he wasn't looking for that he could not have, that he had no right to. He understood the blessing that God had given him, and he was going to cherish that blessing. In verse 16 of chapter 31, he says, if I have kept the poor from their desire, or caused the eyes of the widow to fail, or have eaten my morsel by myself, so that the fatherless could not eat of it, but from my youth I reared him as a father, and from my mother's womb I guided the widows. If I have seen anyone perish for lack of clothing, or any poor man without covering, if his heart has not blessed me, and if he was not warmed with the fleece of my sheep, if I have raised my hand against the fatherless when I saw I had help in the gate, then let my arm fall from my shoulder, let my arm be torn from the socket, for destruction from God is a terror to me, and because of his magnificence I cannot endure. Now, we've read that already in connection with the care and the compassion that he had for others. But I wanted to read it again in connection with this point, because if we continue reading in verse 24, he says, if I have made gold my hope, or said, to find gold, you are my confidence. If I have rejoiced because my wealth was great and because my hand had gained much, if I have observed the sun when it shines or the moon moving in brightness, so that my heart has been secretly enticed and my mouth has kissed my hand, this also would be an iniquity deserving of judgment, for I would have denied God who is above. The compassion and the care that Job showed, and what so many fail to do, why do people fail to do it? There are some people that just don't care. I mean, they just absolutely don't care, and they might even take some joy in the fact that others are suffering while they're prospering. But I don't think that's generally the case with people. I surely don't think it's the case with God's people. But I do think it's the case that there are times when we have an opportunity to help somebody and we don't. So why? Why is that? Is it not sometimes connected with what he says in verse 24? If I have made gold my hope or said to find gold, you are my confidence. If I have rejoiced because my wealth was great. So when we fail to help others, at times it's because we're thinking that, well, I just don't have enough to give them. And maybe that's true. But what do you have? You know, we store up for ourselves treasure on earth. Jesus says don't do that. Matthew chapter 6. Do not lay up treasure for yourselves on earth, but lay up treasure in heaven. That's what Job is doing. Now Job had possessions, but he wasn't a miser. He didn't make gold his God. God was his God. He wasn't going to deny God, either replacing him with material things of this world or replacing him with the sun or the moon or any other thing that would lead him away into idolatry. He had no other gods before him because he understood that to deny God would be iniquity deserving of judgment. And while we talked this morning in our Bible class about the people of Judah and how they got where they were, idolatry was the problem. And we look around today and we don't see people with little wooden statues and golden images, at least not right around here in Oak Grove, on a hill, Brad area. But that does not mean that we are free from idolatry. We need to make sure that God is always first in our life and that the things God would have us to do are first, that we're not trying to just see how much we can collect here in this world. Still in chapter 31, begin reading in verse 29. If I have rejoiced at the destruction of him who hated me or lifted myself up when evil found him, indeed I have not allowed my mouth to sin by asking for a curse on his soul. If the men of my tent have not said, who is there that has not been satisfied with his meat? But no sojourner had to lodge in the street, for I have opened my doors to the traveler. When Jesus says in Matthew chapter 5, you've heard that it's said of old, you shall love your neighbor and hate your enemy. But I say to you, you love your enemy. You do good to him who spitefully uses you and persecutes you. You bless him. That wasn't a new command. Jesus wasn't saying, you've heard that it was said of old, therefore this is the way it was, and I'm telling you this is the way it should be. Job shows through his actions that has always been God's intention. Understand again what he says there in verse 29. If I have rejoiced at the destruction of him who hated me. You ever done that? Person hates you, abused you, treated you wrongfully, and then something bad happens to him. What do we do? Oh, good. He finally got what he deserved. Or lifted myself up when evil found him. He says, I've not sinned with my mouth by asking a curse on his soul. Brother, that's hard. But that's what a blameless and upright man would do. The hospitality that he shows there in verses 31 and 32. Nobody slept in the street. Nobody had to say that Job never offered him anything to eat. And everybody understood it. In verse 31, if the men of my tent have not said, other people understood. Job is a man that, you know, he gives to whoever needs it. And what we want to see is just that it's one thing to say someone is blameless and upright. It's one thing to say that they fear God and they shun evil. But then it's yet again another thing to say that I have done these things. And if I have not done these things, then let me be cursed. Let God judge me. But you know, we don't have to give that permission. You know, Job here, in what he's saying, you know, if I have not, then let God's going to do it whether Job gives that permission or not. And God's going to judge us whether we utter these words or not. What will he find? At the end, in verse 33, if I have covered my transgressions as Adam by hiding my iniquity in my bosom, because I feared the great multitude and dreaded the contempt of family, so that I kept silence and did not go out of the door. Oh, that I have one to hear me. Here is my mark. Oh, that the Almighty would answer me, that my prosecutor had written a book. You know, the thing is, he has written a book. And in this wonderful book, we have the story of Job preserved. And to be blameless and upright means all of these things. But one thing it does not mean, it does not mean sinless, which is what Job says there in verse 33. If I have covered my sin as Adam, after he and Eve had eaten the fruit and recognized that they're naked before God, they went and hid. They thought maybe we can hide from God. That didn't work. Job says, I didn't seek to hide my sin. But he would confess that sin. He would deal with that sin, take care of the sin the proper way. And the Lord has given us that opportunity as well. I look at this list and I realize I got work to do. I've got a lot of work to do. But I'm not going to throw up my hands and say it's just not possible. You know, nobody could live up to that standard. Well, Job did. And Job did it at all times. We won't spend a lot of time on this because this is, you know, one of the points that's commonly referred to from the book of Job. But Job, when he was blessed by God, when he had all of the bountiful things that God had given to him, he didn't forget God. That's how he could help the needy and the poor. That's how he could do the things that God had called him to do. So he didn't forget God in that, but he also didn't forget God when the trials came, when the suffering came. And we see that at the end of chapter 1 when Job arose, tore his robe in verse 20, shaved his head, fell to the ground and worshipped, and he said, "Naked I came from my mother's womb, and naked shall I return there. The Lord gave, and the Lord has taken away. Blessed be the name of the Lord." In all this, Job did not sin nor charge God with wrong. It's not enough to do some of these things some of the time. We need to do all of these things all of the time and still realize that we're not perfect. But that's why Jesus died on the cross, so that we could deal with our sins properly, have them forgiven by God, by the blood of Christ, having confessed those sins, repented of them, and have made the determination that we're going to follow God wherever He leads. And so if you're here this morning and you need to make that determination, then I hope you will. And to repent, that is to put off the sin from your life, but what you're doing instead of sinning is you're striving to be this blameless and upright man or woman that we read about throughout God's Word. If we will let His Word guide us, follow His counsel, then we can be faithful until death. And I encourage you, if you need to make things right with God, if you understand you have anything separating you from God at this time, then make things right while you have this opportunity. If we can help you, would you let us know how while together we stand and sing?
This world is not my home.